snap. The kick is in the air, and the kick this time is no, sir, Ree. No, sir, Ree. Final score, Tennessee 20, Florida 17. Pandemonium reigns.
You're listening to the RTI Podcast, powered by WalkieTalkInsider.com.
RTI Podcast on this Thursday. I'm happy to be joined by Managing Editor for Beaver's Edge, Brendan Slaughter, covers Oregon State men's basketball. Happy to have him on with us. Brendan, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, Trey. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to March Madness and, you know, all the excitement that comes across with it. And to be honest, after not having it last year, just ready to get these games tipped off.
How interesting is it to you that you know, we go into this season and coming off last year where we just had nothing and everything was shut down? Does it make it so much bigger this year, or do you think it just kind of business as usual?
No, I think that's a great point, because I do think it's something that sports fans across the nation have missed. And you look back to last year losing, you know, the tournament, that was kind of the beginning of, you know, everything as it kind of began to cascade, you know, throughout. And yet here we are a year later, you know, still working through, you know, this pandemic across the country. But, you know, just the fact that they were able to get the season in, like when the season first started and even the football season, I personally was like, okay, we'll see what happens. And, you know, you got to give credit to every one of these student athletes across the country that have, you know, gone through the COVID protocols, and, you know, that attention to detail and discipline to stay on the floor. It's been impressive to see, you know, across the country this year. And that's why I think it's so awesome we have a tournament back, is all these student athletes, these 68 teams that are in, they have worked tirelessly to be able to, you know, live through this virus while still playing a basketball season.
No, I agree completely. And that's why I think it's just, it's almost wild that everybody's bubbled up, but I'm glad they are. We'll get the tournament in hopefully without any glitches. I'm sure there'll be one or two, but hopefully nothing big. And it's a testament to these players. I mean, right when they got to Indianapolis, they had to quarantine for 24 hours, and, you know, they're working in convention center ballrooms, and
right,
just a lot of stuff that goes into this, Brendan.
Certainly. And, you know, it was, you know, Oregon State, obviously, by way of winning the Pac-12 tournament Saturday night, they took off and went to Indianapolis, you know, later that evening. And you know, seeing, you know, they went in and went right into a quarantine, and seeing kind of the social media images that are coming, you know, our way and whatnot. It's honestly, Trey, very similar to me to kind of like what the NBA did with the bubble, where you're seeing practices in ballrooms and you're seeing guys all kind of in one general hub. And, you know, obviously it's a kind of a one-time thing for this year, but I think there could be some unique things about having, you know, everyone kind of in one area as far as kind of the, you know, the real college kind of homey feel of March Madness, if you get what I'm saying.
That's a great way to put it. Let's talk about Oregon State before we get into the matchup of this. Oregon State wrapped up the regular season, about 17-12 mark. They went 10-10 in the conference. They were picked to finish 12th in the conference. And all of a sudden, you know, before we talk about making that run, how do you kind of wrap up what they did in the regular season? What did you see out of them as they made that way to the conference tournament? What stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting year. I mean, you mentioned it, they go 5-5, or they go 500 in conference play, and you know, it had been an up and down year. I mean, you kind of look back to the beginning of the year where, you know, obviously they were picked 12th, and that's, you know, just public perception, because this was a new team with a lot of new faces, and they needed time to work it all together and kind of get the chemistry rolling. I mean, I think back to early in the season, you know, they dropped a couple really, really bad losses to Portland and Wyoming that, you know, with all due respect, would have kept them out of the tournament should they have not gotten the automatic bid. So, you know, it was up and down. So I look at, like, you know, the early part of the non-conference, there were some struggles. Then there was a little bit of hope in Pac-12 play. Then there was kind of a moment when they got shellacked by Arizona midway through the conference season, where they kind of just circled all the wagons together and said, you know, we're just going to play harder than every team throughout the year, and we are going to, you know, have fun playing basketball. And ever since that, you know, kind of moment, the Beavers have just started to play better basketball. And it was really, you know, regular season, they did what they had to do to kind of get into that fifth spot and, you know, in the Pac-12 tournament. And I look to Arizona, who, because of their postseason ineligibility, allowed Oregon State to get in to get one of the all important byes in the Pac-12 tournament. And if they had to play 4 games in 4 days, as opposed to 3 games in 3 days, I don't know if they would have been able to get it done. So there were just a lot of factors. They won the games they had to win to get in position to get a bye for the tournament, which is so important. And then obviously we'll talk about it. They just went on a run in the tournament that I didn't see coming or didn't see as possible.
When you look at the regular season that they had under Coach Wayne, and then you look at how they're playing basketball, and you talked about it, you know, halfway, you know, around the halfway point of the season, they kind of flipped the switch a little bit and played more aggressive is the best way to put it. What do you attribute that to? Was it the style of play? Did they have to switch something up in their game plan, like Tennessee had to do this year? What do you attribute to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this team took on the personality of their head coach, Wayne Tinkle. You know, Wayne Tinkle is the definition of a blue collar lunch pail, come in, punch out, do your work, and, you know, do it in, you know, the Oregon State way, which is, you know, lunch pails, hard hats, go to work. And to me, there was just a point where that the toughness and togetherness and just playing with a passion, which are all things that I believe Wayne Tinkle embodies, it was just somewhere along the line in the regular season where you could just tell things started to click and guys started to play better. Guys started to play better on defense. Guys started communicating better, trusting each other, having fun on the basketball court. Guys grew, they matured, got into better roles, so on and so forth. So, you know, I got to give credit to the leadership of this team for certain, you know, guys like Ethan Thompson. But I really think this team just took on the mindset of what Wayne Tinkle was asking them to do.
So before we get into the conference tournament run that they had, what kind of offense should Tennessee fans expect to see when they play on Friday? What was the main ingredient that the Beavers ran this year to try to get against opposing defenses? What does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, Oregon State, you know, averages just over 70 points a game, and, you know, their real bread and butter is being able to kind of, you know, have a lot of varying offensive production. So, you know, you've obviously got Ethan Thompson and Jared Lucas, who are kind of the two guys there at the guard positions. They kind of, you know, work the, you know, the pick and roll action to an extent. They work some high-low stuff as well. But the impressive thing about this team offensively is that it can kind of be a varied production. It doesn't need to be one guy or two guys or even just a guy. Like, for instance, against Colorado, the Pac-12 championship game, Ethan Thompson didn't have that great of a game. It was actually Maurice Kalou, who averages, you know, just over 5 points a game, coming off the bench and leading the team in scoring to help, you know, buoy that Colorado victory. So more than anything, it is still a pretty a system that likes to focus on putting the ball in the hands of their guards and letting their guards make plays. But for the most part, the interesting thing about their offense this year is there's not like one guy that you could circle and say, hey, we take him out, their offense is going to fall down or fall apart. They just have such a varied attack that any guy can kind of be willing to give you 10 or 15 on any given night.
Brendan, does Oregon State, do they get into the paint a lot? I mean, I watched them in the tournament games, but is that their game plan? Do they have a post presence where they can get it down to the block and try to go at the basket? Or is this more of, like you were talking about, guard play, getting to the rim, trying to draw fouls, stuff along those lines? How is it in the post? Because that's a matchup I'm going to be interested in on Friday.
Certainly. And I would say that they've recently have put a bigger emphasis on having a post presence. And I think that's a big reason why they were able to find success in the Pac-12 tournament. I look at a guy like Warith Alatishe. If you don't know his name, you're going to need to know his name, you know, by the time Friday comes around, because I believe he is Oregon State's best kind of post presence. He's a bit of a wiry four in the sense of he's really long, athletic, can jump out of a gym. Needs, you know, if he comes back next year, we'll, you know, add some more weight to develop a bigger post presence. But he has a really nice kind of elbow-ish range jumper. He can back down in the post. He's got a nice hook shot. I also look at a guy like Roman Silva, who's just a huge presence. The Beavers definitely like to try to find him on the block and let him kind of get to his spot and go off the glass. So Rodriguez Della as well. So I would say more so the Beavers emphasize guard play, but recently I think they've stumbled onto something that they've liked, which was a nice kind of balance between the both. And that's kind of what they were able to use to success in the Pac-12 tournament.
So Tennessee is, you know, they right now with the absence of John Fulkerson, and they do have Eve Pons that they can play at the four or the five spot, but it's a lot of guard play. If you've gone back and watched the game against Alabama, it was pretty much running a four guard set and then, you know, bringing in Pons or Euros at the five to right. be able to play with that. So what kind of defense does Oregon State like to run? Do they run the zone? Do they run the man? What do you see Tennessee maybe having a problem with on Friday?
That's a good question. You know, I think the Beavers will mix up defenses quite a bit. You know, Wayne Tinkle in his tenure has had times where he's been very heavy into the 2-3 zone, and the Beavers have used the 2-3 zone very, very effectively. There's also times when they match up a man-to-man as well. It'll be interesting to see, based on Tennessee and their style of play and game plan, where Wayne Tinkle and the Beavers end up going. You know, that's going to be one of the things that I've kind of kept an eye on as well, because it was kind of different. You know, it was a different situation for like UCLA, Oregon, and Colorado, because they were able to kind of keep their opponents off base. I would expect right off the shoot them to probably start in more man-to-man defense and work in a 2-3 zone. But I could also see it the other way, where they, you know, exclusively work in a 2-3 and then use man for situational moments.
Okay. So let's talk about the tournament for a minute, the Pac-12 tournament. And they come out, they go to overtime with UCLA. And then they beat Oregon and Colorado, who Tennessee played earlier in the season. Walk me through the tournament. And what was it like? I mean, you had the game plan of what they were trying to do and attack the rim. What were some ingredients that got Oregon State on that run towards the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, absolutely, Trey. And let me just first say, it definitely this year more than other years, it definitely hurt me not being physically in Las Vegas for one of these tournaments. I usually go for either the Pac-12 men's or women's, and I love the atmosphere that they have down there for these tournaments. So that part was kind of a bummer, not being able to be there and kind of see this, because it's such a rarity for Oregon State. But just to put it very simply, Trey, I don't know if you could have found a Beaver fan that would have told you this was possible.
Wow.
And that's not necessarily a knock on like how, you know, on the Beavers play going into the tournament or anything else. It was just winning the Pac-12 tournament is hard. The Beavers had never won the Pac-12 tournament in their school's history. And so when you put that all together and then you look at the field, you go, well, you know, they're going to have to play against Oregon. Well, Oregon 3 to 4 days before had beaten them soundly. You know, you figured UCLA was in the field. Oh, there's another tournament team. USC was in the field, Colorado. And heading into the weekend, you kind of knew, hey, you know, Oregon State would need to win this thing to get into the tournament. How much, you know, motivation are they going to have, knowing that one and done, their season would be over. And, you know, I had to eat crow because, you know, I thought they would play well, but I certainly didn't expect them to go on a run like this. And quite simply, it was one of the more entertaining and just awesome experiences to watch since I've, you know, covered this program since 2014. And just the heart, the determination, whether it was, you know, first game against UCLA, I believe they spotted the Bruins a 14 or 16 point lead, one of the two, and managed to come back and win that game in overtime. And then the next game to go play your rival, who again beat you soundly on your home floor 4 or 5 days earlier, take care of them in a, you know, really good overall game where they just handled Oregon. And then to finish it off, it's like, not only did they win their two, but they finished it off to get that automatic bid. And it's just unprecedented, uncharted territory as far as the Beavers closing a season on this much of like a high and a run. So there's definitely a lot of excitement as they're getting ready to, you know, enter this tournament against Tennessee, because it really is rarefied air for them.
Was it that game against Colorado? I mean, how do you sum that up? I mean, I watched it. I mean, it was interesting to see them go back and forth down the court. Is what they tried to do from outside the perimeter, and then also trying to get to the paint, because I remember watching Colorado earlier in the season against Tennessee, and it was interesting to watch their guard play and also what they ran on defense. What do you think they did better? Was it attacking the rim, or do you think it was more of those mid-range jumpers against Colorado that pulled it out?
That's a good question, because that Colorado game was, it was an interesting contest, because one that for the longest time, you know, I kept thinking in my head, I was like, you know, Colorado's going to go on a run. Oregon State's kind of, you know, be able to absorb that. And, you know, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I look at, you know, a game like this, Ethan Thompson is your leading scorer. He finishes with 7 points in that game. If you had told Oregon State fans beforehand, Ethan Thompson finishes with 7 points in the championship game, I don't think they would have believed that you would have won. But again, you get the production from a guy like Maurice Kalu. You get 10 points off the bench from Gianni Hunt, who hadn't, you know, offered a ton, you know, throughout the year as far as scoring wise and spurts. So to me, it was just having an answer, right? Whether it was not being intimidated by the moment, then, you know, Colorado coming through and, you know, playing great basketball. I mean, Colorado's a great team, and Oregon State was able to kind of just take their blows punch for punch and just hang on enough to be able to get the win. And, you know, that game was entertaining for a lot of reasons, but probably not more entertaining than the Bill Walton commentary throughout the whole thing.
that's always entertaining, to say the least. And
went a lot of different directions throughout the broadcast. So, you know, you're kind of trying to focus on basketball, and, you know, Bill Walton's giving you, you know, the lessons of, you know, universe. So it's a, it was just one of those kind of runs and moments that, you know, anyone following the team, covering the team, being on the team won't soon forget.
Okay. So let's switch it up to Friday's game. John Fulkerson, he had a procedure done this past Sunday. He took that brutal elbow from Amar Payne in the Florida game. Tennessee comes out against Alabama and they play well. The problem for Tennessee is they had those 4-minute droughts that put them into trouble when it comes to scoring. When you look at Tennessee's roster right now and what they're going to try to do, and we talked about it earlier, they're going to try to run that four guard system if Fulkerson can't go, and then be able to put Pons in there at the five potentially. What could give Oregon State problems with the way Tennessee plays basketball?
Yeah, that's a good question. And what I look at from Tennessee, just from when I've been able to kind of dive into them on a very surface level, was their defense, right? 63.2 points per game. That's 23rd nationally. And, you know, Tennessee's defense is what really stood out to me, because in my mind, you know, with how hot the Beavers are playing right now, I think a team would have to come in and kind of lock them down to kind of get out of the flow and rhythm they're in, because they're playing so well and so together right now. And, you know, Wayne Tinkle obviously mentioned Jaden Springer, you know, right off the bat, as soon as Oregon State and Tennessee were put together. So definitely a guy that, you know, Oregon State will have to, you know, probably put Ethan Thompson on to guard, maybe Zach Reichel. And same with Keon Johnson as well. The backcourt that Tennessee poses with those two guys, I know, you know, that'll be a point of emphasis, because those are two guys that Wayne Tinkle, you know, mentioned right off the bat after Oregon State was matched up against Tennessee. So good guards on both sides. And I think it could be an interesting guard matchup where, you know, you mentioned John Fulkerson. I think it's possible that the team that gets more production from the front court could be the team that is in a better position to get the win.
So if Tennessee fans are looking at this Oregon State team, and you've talked about a couple players already, But what can Tennessee fans expect from the Beavers on Friday when it comes to, and you talked about Tennessee's defense, but when it comes to trying to attack Tennessee's defense on offense, what can Tennessee fans expect? Who are some players that the Vol fans need to be looking out for?
Yeah, without question, you know, right off the bat, Ethan Thompson, you know, senior, been in the program a long time now, and, you know, arguably took a big ownership role in trying to get the Beavers through the tournament. You know, he leads the team in scoring, does a little bit of everything. He had some great moments in the Pac-12 tournament, even, you know, without scoring. So he's just kind of one of the, I'd argue, maybe the glue guy of this team. Jared Lucas is another guy. He shoots, you know, almost 40% from three-point range. The guy can get hot. He's kind of Oregon State's scorer if he is able to get hot. You know, he had a couple big games down in the tournament as well. And then the last guy you got to keep an eye on is Warith Alatiche, really, really coming into his own as, you know, kind of a 4-3-4-5, can really play a couple different positions, but very springy, very wiry, athletic, long, plays hard, and, you know, has a really, really soft touch around the rim. Those are a couple guys that stand out to me just right off the bat.
So defensively for Oregon State, how do they match up against Tennessee? Like Santiago Vescovi, you know, he's the type of player, he's turned into, you know, trying to shoot the ball from behind the perimeter, not much going up to the basket much anymore. You've got Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson who are going to attack. Jaden Springer loves that mid-range jumper. I look at Tennessee and I wonder, can they put this thing together for 40 straight minutes without having a scoring drought? If you had to look at what Tennessee tries to do, which is go to the paint, and you've watched Oregon State all year, how do they attack Tennessee defensively to stop them from driving the paint so much?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because I think it brings in the aspect of the Beavers needing to have strong front court play and not getting guys like Roman Silva or Maurice Kalou or Rodriguez-Ndella or Alatiche into foul trouble, because Oregon State's strength is being able to defend from behind the arc. They only allow 31% from behind the 3-point line, and that leads the Pac-12. That's what helped them against Oregon, what helped them against Colorado, and what helped them against UCLA. Their 3-point defense has arguably been one of their big kind of statistics that really works in their favor. So, you know, if Tennessee's game plan is to go and get into the paint, I think that's going to be an interesting matchup, because it'll be whether or not Oregon State's bigs can defend without fouling, or if Tennessee's guards can get in the paint, be able to then potentially drive and kick or take the open shot that's there or draw a foul, one of those three options. So yeah, I think that could be a very, very important matchup to watch, because it could go either way.
All right, so we're breaking it down. Friday afternoon, 4:30 Eastern start time, so 1:30 for you guys on the West Coast. What's your feel on Friday? You don't have to throw out a projection if you don't want to, but what's your feel on the way things maybe turn out on Friday?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, because, you know, I'm still kind of trying to formulate what my opinion is going to be. No, folks, I've not filled out a whole bracket yet. No, I wait until the last minute to kind of really do my research. And the reality of it is Tennessee is a 5 seed for a reason. Oregon State is a 12 seed for a reason. It wouldn't shock me if, you know, Tennessee, being, you know, the more complete team over the course of the year, was able to get the win. However, I will say that Oregon State is one of the hottest teams coming into this tournament. And that's what's kind of given me the expectation that I think it will at least come down to the last few possessions and be a good game, because from what I've been able to see, Tennessee's not a team that's going to, you know, shoot you out of a gym. And, you know, Oregon State, I think, will be able to keep pace. Will they be able to get the win? Hard to say. I still kind of want to be able to kind of marinate on it a little bit, but at the very least, I think it'll be a good matchup between two teams that kind of have different styles, but potentially could, you know, match up for a really solid first March Madness game. So if I had to say, I think it'll be a game that ends by one team winning by just maybe 5 or 6 points.
Brendan, if Tennessee goes on 4-minute scoring droughts, I promise you Oregon State will take advantage of it. So that's something that Tennessee is going to have to watch going into this game. Let's hope both teams do what they have to do with COVID procedures over the next day, and we get to play and watch a game on Friday. Brendan, tell everybody where they can follow your work leading up to the game on Friday.
Absolutely. Check out beaversedge.com. We'll have complete coverage of this matchup and looking forward to it. So again, thank you so much for having me on, Trey. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to some basketball between a couple orange schools. I like it.
It's going to be interesting to say the least. Don't throw out the orange argument to Tennessee fans. Goodness gracious. they'll go crazy on you. Brendan, thank you so much for joining. Have a great week, man. Enjoy the tournament, and I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Appreciate it, Trey. Thank you so much, and enjoy the game as well.